Welcome to the Life Self-Mastery podcast, where we bring in entrepreneurs who have created online businesses and improved their lifestyles. Here's your host, Rohit Malhotra.
Hi everyone, this is Rohit from Life Self-Mastery, and today I'm excited to have Boris Manhart, who's co-founded several companies including Pulp, CodeCheck, Numbers and Growth Unlimited. And he's invested in startups providing early stage funding and has a social investment fund called the Growth Impact Fund. Welcome to the show, Boris.
Thank you so much for having me, Rohit. This will be fun. Thanks.
Awesome. So Boris, you know, you've founded a lot of companies, but what got you started in this crazy world of startups?
Yeah, this was a total coincidence, like all good things. It was during my studies. Honestly, I wasn't a really great student. I was more into partying and clubbing. And obviously, this was very expensive, right?
Yeah. So
together with two friends, we figured out how to enter the clubs without paying. So we launched a website called Pulp and would go into the clubs, take pictures of the crowd and put it online next day. And you have to imagine this was like really the early days of internet before social media. So it was basically the only way to see your face in the internet, right?
Yeah.
And like the 50 minutes of fame, the famous ones, right? And this was the first step. We got some traction, but I mean, it was like kind of ridiculous if you compare it to today's numbers. But we were able to sell it to a big corporate, an international corporate. They used it for advertising, basically. I guess they shut it down after 6 months or so, but whatever. But with the funds we gained from this acquisition, we invested into a agency, and we serve, you know, their different international brands like Microsoft, like Nestle, Unilever, made really great projects throughout 10 years, basically. So I was the CEO of this agency called iMedia over 10 years.
Okay.
And with all the experience I gained with working with customers, I got an offer from a guy who wanted to launch one of the first fintech company builders. It was like, I guess, 2010 or 11.
Right.
And I joined. And this was Central Way back then. And Central Way became Numbers later. Mm-hmm. So basically, we focused then on just one project. And the fun part is this was the only time and the first time where I had to get rid of customers because we merged with an agency and we wanted to focus fully on creating or building startups this time. And I had to get rid of all the customers and finish the projects. That was basically my first job at Numbers and Central Way.
Got it. Interesting. And you know, I've been part of a Decacorn, but obviously as one of the many operators. But what were some of your learnings from, you know, building Numbers?
Well, it was an amazing time because we scaled pretty fast, right? So we started with a small team, and then we scaled up to, I don't know, probably 100 people in 1.5 years. And obviously throughout those months, you basically go through different phases of a company. Usually it takes years, right, to get to those phases, but we did it really fast pace. And I learned a lot about, you know, building teams, leading teams, and especially about leading teams. I would say I learned the basic principles of leadership there, because before I always was working with great people, right, but not with, let's say, the best talent in the world. And this changed a lot, right? So at Numbers, I realized that, you know, like, I'm not the brightest person in the room anymore. So I really had to put my ego aside and to understand what leadership is actually about. It's not about, you know, telling people what to do. It's not about, you know, kind of feel like always pushing them or whatever. It's really about creating this environment where people can thrive. It's all about trust as well, especially when you work with top talent. And it's all about, and this is the most important thing, aligning on goals, right? The whole team, and provide support when needed. This means understanding what people are working on, not always in details, but understanding when they have difficulties, when they have challenges, and then supporting by adding resources or ideas or whatever, right? So, but being more in the background. So I would say the most important thing I've learned was really that an effective leadership is more about elevating the whole instead of like being part of the tiny little details.
Got it. And after that, you built CodeCheck. Was that a continuation of what you were trying to build in numbers?
Obviously, I joined CodeCheck after numbers, and CodeCheck was already an existing product.
Okay.
But together with, let's say, the first team, I founded the company, right? Company CodeCheck. It wasn't the founder of the tool,
right?
But we started back then, and all these leadership skills that I learned. Obviously, that helped me to build up the team at CodeCheck, which was quite complex because we had a team in Zurich, we had a team in Berlin, we had an entity in London in US. So I was traveling a lot, right? And obviously, this knowledge of basic leadership and aligning teams helped a lot to achieve our goals as well there.
Got it. And I've been part of AI companies. But you very interestingly mentioned that AI will eat its children. So do you think most of the AI startups valuation will go to zero? Obviously, you've had OpenAI, which gave a great numbers last year, around $2 billion. But what is your thoughts about AI startups and companies?
I mean, it feels a bit like the early days of internet, right? Imagine Pulp, my first venture today, right? It's totally doesn't make sense, right? So you have social media and all the rest. So there's a huge pace of innovation happening currently. And lots of those startups will get obsolete because they will become features of bigger products. You always see this happening in ChatGPT, right? So or OpenAI, they're launching lots of different initiatives that had, that have been startups before, right? And this will continue. And then the other thing is, I'm not talking about OpenAI, not talking about big players. Probably they will face different challenges in future as well. But talking about all those AI startups that actually are based on existing LLM, and I think most of them will disappear because there is almost no defensibility, right? So it's easy to replicate what they do, especially when they become successful. You see that this creates lots of red oceans when you have a look at all those AI chatbots, right? I guess I've seen 5 new ones this week already. Whatever. So there's simply it doesn't make any sense anymore to create another AI chatbot because you won't add any value to this market, right?
Right.
And I think, the basic or the fundamental business principle of having a market with a need, serving this need, is truer than ever, right? It's totally independent from the technology. Technology should serve customers or should serve your customer, should help to solve a problem, but shouldn't be the sake of your startup, right? So, I think, if you create a new tech startup these days, you will most likely use AI as a technology, but you still should solve a problem or serve a certain need of your customers and add value, basically.
Right, got it. And, I've been to, a few B schools, but do you think, since you've been part of CodeCheck and numbers, do you think CEOs are born and do you think a B school degree like a MBA is worth it for CEOs?
Right. I've been a very bad CEO at the beginning, so I wasn't born with that skills. I mean, there are some personality traits that help. So if you, have a certain leadership skills, if you have communication skills or empathy as well, or some strategic thinking, that all helps, right? So you probably you need some certain traits, but I think throughout the years I was working as a CEO, I changed a lot. I even changed in different setups, right? So for example, at Kocek, I was a hired CEO.
Right.
That means I had a different role as when I was a founder, you know, and became a CEO. Because usually when you're a founder, you have a strong emphasis on the product.
Yeah.
Right. And when you're a higher CEO, they usually seek for a person who can scale the company and internationalize. Right. So that's you have much more focus on operations. So well, to answer your question, I don't think that you're born as a CEO. I think you need to learn it, you become better. What helps is to be very open to feedback and to create this environment where people actually can give you feedback, even negative feedback. And it's never nice, right? So when they give you negative, it's never nice, but it's the only way to grow and to learn, right? And I even think, you know, that I've worked with different CEOs as well, and they're so different, right? They don't even think that it's actually a role in a way, right? It's really... Yeah. You basically need to shape it, and your the environment where you work is shaping it.
Right.
Mm. Your question about the MBA.
Yeah.
I'm working a lot with EMBA students from the IMD in Lausanne.
Yeah.
And what I see is that the MBA helps to reflect.
Yeah.
So what I called before, like getting feedback, is what happens during this assembly, right? You get a lot of feedback. And I think people change.
Mm.
So the most valuable part is not what you'll actually learn, but it's what you basically get as, or what you can add to your personality, right? What you can learn or grow basically throughout this 1 or 2 years that you study. Mm.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you are absolutely right that it helps you reflect, makes you like a better communicator. I think that is, if I look back, I think that is what I learned, a lot of feedback, so that I'm also able to be a little more clear about what I want. And also
exactly. You learn a lot about yourself, right? So about your skills. And this is something I learned on the job, say at numbers, you know, where I learned that where my limits are actually, right?
Yeah.
So, and this is something that you can learn probably in faster pace and more in a more secure space at an MBA.
Yeah. Also, it depends on the person, on, you know, how much they want to learn and how much they want to apply, you know, what they learned. So, absolutely. And, you know, since you built teams and companies before, so what is the number one, you know, failure condition for teams if they're not able to execute?
Yeah, I think it's misalignment. You know, you can create the best or build the best team ever. It's the greatest talent. And if you don't align them on a certain goal, they will run in different directions. And that means your whole product or startup will stand still. And I guess that's something that I see happening a lot. I'm using OKRs.
Okay.
To align my teams and to track the progress. And when I talk about tracking progress, it's not about controlling. It's really about understanding if they face challenges, if I can add support. And I think that's super important to understand, because if one person of a team stays behind, the whole team won't achieve their milestones.
Mm.
So they all depend on each other. It's super important to be very disciplined when it comes to OKRs, to really talk about that on a weekly basis. It's not just about implementing, it's really about using it as a communication tool as well, in one-on-ones and team meetings and so forth. And then the other thing is, you know, like, it's all about creating as well what I mentioned, this environment or this culture of common values, which are actually basic rules, right? And common understanding of how to collaborate, of how to work together. And another thing, what I see happening sometimes, you know, with teams that don't work well is as well when the founders are not aligned. Right. That happens quite often, actually. It happened to me as well. When they basically tear into a different direction, the same thing happens, right? You right. should stand still.
Mm. Right. And especially, you know, where teams, I mean, OKRs are one thing, but how do you make sure that, you know, the teams are aligned with each other? Like I've seen, you know, since I've been in the sales and revenue part of the roles, I've seen like a lot of sales guys and product guys are not aligned with each other.
Mm.
Or maybe when sales teams gets an account, they're not really aligned with the customer success team. So like they just hand it over and the job is done. How do you make sure that, you know, that sort of communication is still alive between all the departments?
It's a lot of communication. It's really a lot of communication. I'm using different tools for communication. One good thing is we always had this brown bag lunches on Fridays, for example. And here, you know, one person of one team would present what they're working on or some ideas or even some hobbies sometimes.
Mm.
But I think alignment happens when people know their challenges, when they have respect for each other. And this is all about culture after all.
Right. Yeah. Got it. And you've been building, you know, Growth Unlimited. So how do you help founders? And you also run a Growth Impact Fund. So, you know, which are the sectors that you look into investing into those founders?
I have to say, we don't have a fund, right? We invest our personal money into startups. But we do very few investments. So last year we did two. This year, probably another two or three. We'll see. Nice. But what we do, what our main focus is product market fit. Because I realized, you know, this milestone is crucial for every startup.
Yeah.
And it happened to me that I haven't achieved it, at least in all different areas of certain companies, for example, Kojak. We had a lot of traction, we had millions of users, but we could never build a sustainable business model.
Right.
It's probably a bit early for a sustainability focused startup. This was a couple of years ago already. I guess these days it's easier. But this topic, product market fit, I always considered it as a huge challenge, and I thought there must be a better way to get there, right?
Right.
So when I left my last venture, First of all, I focused on reflection, right? I wrote down everything and I started to build a process to get to product market fit faster.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens a lot is that people iterate on frameworks, on tools like OKRs, for example, right? Right. Sometimes you need lots of iteration until it works, but this is not necessary and doesn't add value to your startup. So what I see where we add value at Growth Unlimited is that we already have all those frameworks in place, that we have templates in place, that we can train the teams on doing it right first attempt, and on really on focusing on product market fit. So we don't tell them, you know, if their idea is right or wrong, because I can't do this, right? It's really the customers who need to decide. Sometimes I'm not part of the target group.
No.
So I cannot tell, but I can tell how to test it, how to get this feedback in fast pace. And my idea is basically that we can lead startups to product market fit within 6 months, while the average, you know, takes between 2 and 3 years, right?
Right.
And I strongly convinced that, you know, from 3 years, at least 2 years is just, you know, like basically testing out things, changing, doing something else, and or creating the 10th iteration on the pitch deck before you even need to raise money. So that's basically what we do. And sometimes when we see, okay, there is some early traction, we like the team, they like us, then we invest a small amount at the very early stage. Because usually funds are missing at this stage and you need to show something before you can fundraise basically.
Okay, got it. And do you take multiple number of clients at one time, or do you like to be hands off and advise startups?
Yeah, we only work with limited numbers of startups. Okay. But I work as well with a accelerator called Picora, where I have a product market fit e-learning program, and this is open to everybody basically.
Right. Okay. Got it. And especially, what has happened in the last 2 years, in fact, since COVID 2020 and 21, a lot of capital was raised. And you've seen, large rounds being raised in 2021. But do you think too much capital can kill companies at this each stage?
It can, but it really depends on, let's say, as well, the culture or the team itself. Right. I had this once where I would say we had enough capital to start. And I knew that, this is kind of it's a gift, right? It's not something that you can just spend now on, I don't say crazy acquisition campaigns or whatever. It's really kind of an extension of your runway. And I guess this is super important that you really see it as something extremely positive and something that helps you to go even deeper when it comes to reaching product market fit, to testing stuff. So for example, you can invest in, let's say, a professional usability test or in a professional brand agency. But if you start too early to scale, you will burn a lot of money, and it's so easy to burn money.
True. Right?
Even if you have tons of capital, right? I don't know if you recall Quibi.
Yeah,
I do. They managed to burn like $2 billion or something in less than 2 years. So this is easy, but really kind of extending your runway and going deep, do your homework, probably with better talent, right? Probably faster.
Right.
I guess this is when you invest the capital really sustainably.
Got it. And I think in the last year or so, things have became a lot saner, but how do you see the, seed and seed market and, pre-seed market change on the next 12 to 14 months?
Mm. Well, I think there's still a lot of dry powder, and we've seen lots of bridge rounds last year.
Mm.
And I guess our hope that this will change and that more funds will basically go into the early stages, new startups. We will see lots of startups fail, right? Because you cannot add one bridge round after another. Sometimes there's an end.
Yeah.
So we will probably see more new startups coming, but as well more failures this year. Mm.
Got it. And what are some of the biggest lessons that a founder needs from VCs, especially if they're not able to raise the funding? What other advice or lesson can they give other than capital?
You mean beside funding?
Besides funding, yeah.
Well, I think that's still the core. You shouldn't expect much more from VCs, especially.
Okay.
You can usually. I mean, they can add value when it comes to networks, when it comes to advice. They've seen a lot, right? But it's all about managing your investors as well. So this is kind of a task you need to do, right? It's not that they will come proactively and support you. And when I say managing, it's really about building a relationship, not just sending emails. Really have lunch with them, talk to them, discuss things, and you will probably get, let's say, beside new contacts as well, new ideas. This can be, you can build great relationships, but it's really, really about you. You need to build it as a founder. You need to manage it as a founder.
Mm, got it. And, Boris, when you are looking to invest into startups, what is it? Which is a priority for you, traction, team, market, what do you look for in a investment?
I like this question because I usually ask it to students as well. I usually ask what's market, team, or product, and everybody says it's team.
Yeah.
Then some IT guys say it's product, and nobody ever says the market. But if you think about, you know, like if you have a great market,
right,
it's a huge need. Even a mediocre product, even an MEP built by two founders, will get traction, right? So traction, and as well, partially the team is a consequence of having a market, right? So if you have market, you will get traction. If you have traction, you will be able to hire better talent, right?
Got it. Interesting. And especially with, you know, you've seen a lot of these schools, people are going back into, you know, investment banking or, you know, traditional jobs, consulting and all that. But if they are, you know, brave young people who still want to get into startup landscape, you know, what should they know when they're trying to enter the landscape in 2024?
Yeah, I would say it's probably not what you expect.
Yeah,
especially in the early stages of a company, you basically do everything as a founder, right? You clean the bathroom, take up the phone, you do sales, you do marketing, you probably code. So it's you fill the gaps, right?
Yeah.
But you still own the vision. Mm-hmm. But like this vision and innovation and freedom is probably only a small part of the job, right?
Mm-hmm.
But still, I think it's you know, if you have the passion for that, it's really great because it never gets boring.
Yeah,
it's obviously a lot of work, but it really never gets boring. You learn a lot, and you learn as well to be patient. You know, especially at the beginning, you need a lot of patience. It just, you cannot rush and just, you know, go out with a product that isn't tested or that has no kind of market feedback yet. So this is all things you need to learn. And I think it's an incredible journey you can have.
I always feel like younger you are, I think you can take more risks. But obviously, you know, once you have a lot of experience, you can take those risks, but it becomes easier when you are younger.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it can do a lot more. You get more productive because you already know a lot of things, right?
Yeah.
But there's some advantages of having this, you know, background of being there for a couple of years. But even without experience, with all this patience, you can achieve a lot. Right?
Makes sense. And Boris, I quickly want to do the top three. What's your favorite business book?
It's still Lean Startup.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's even, you know, more up to date these days while you know, there's not a lot of funding. And I always tell everybody, you know, go the lean way before you reach product market fit, before you really understand, you know, what's your business. What's your market? Who's your customer? And so I think, you know, like this was probably my most influential book, and I would recommend to read it for everybody, even though we have probably better tactics these days. It's already, I guess, 10 years old or more. But this is something you can still learn and read up. But the whole idea of the book is still up to date.
Got it. And absolutely, I think that's one of the best startup books that I've read. Being able to put that in the show notes. And, you know, if you could go back in the time when you started working in startups, what is the one thing you would have focused on or done anything differently?
I would say, especially like what I just mentioned, really focusing on product market fit at the beginning and really having this understanding that there is this point when you know the answers of who is your customer, how to serve your customers, what's the solution to their problem, basically. And this answers a lot. This answers you know, how your product should look like, how your team should look like, because once you know what kind of value you're going to deliver, you know what people you need to achieve that, right?
Yeah.
So knowing that helps tremendously, and really focusing on that, and probably be even a bit, you know, like under the radar at the beginning, and testing a lot, so that helps. And the other thing is as well, what I've learned throughout the years is like to share more. my thoughts, to discuss my thoughts with advisors, with my team. I at the beginning, I would say I was really kind of like, I had my ideas and I didn't communicate, I didn't challenge them. And this is something which is extremely valuable, because you will change your ideas throughout the time. You'll get lots of feedback. And if you work with advisors from certain industries, with certain specialists as well, domain experts, you will get lots of insights that you just cannot get somewhere else, right? You cannot read them up. You don't feel them when you just read a blog. But when you talk to a person, when a person really shows you how to do it, that adds lots of value.
Got it. No, absolutely. And what's your favorite online tool, for example, Gmail, Slack, Zoom?
It's I'm being very, let's say, probably boring. It's ChatGPT. I would say it changed my life tremendously, right? And especially working a lot of time from home. You know, it's my companion. I do a lot of brainstorming. It helps me to write. It helps me to, you know, kind of do little tasks like writing emails.
Yeah.
Be nicer to people, because, you know, like before, you know, I was pretty straight to the point, and now I just start like that, and then I give it to ChatGPT, and it refines the email, and it's always much better. It sounds just much better and more polite, actually.
Absolutely. I think that's a super tool. I think I've really invested a lot into that tool, with a lot of prompts and all that. I think it's a great assistant, for sure.
Absolutely.
And what are the best ways people can reach out to you and know more about, you know, Growth Limited and what you do?
To reach out to me, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, my website is, it's called Growth Unlimited, which is growthunltd.com. And people can read it up and as well reach out to me as well via LinkedIn. Always mentioned I have a newsletter which is currently a bit on pause, but I will start it again in March. So there's a newsletter on the website all about product market fit, with lots of templates, information, showcases, and so forth. So I believe that this can add a lot of value when you're in this early stage of a startup.
Sure. So absolutely, we'll put that in the show notes. And Boris, thank you so much for taking on time and speaking to us. I really enjoyed my conversation with
you. Thanks, it was great fun. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Life Self Mastery podcast, where we teach you how to start and grow your online business. For more information, visit Rohit's blog at www.lifeselfmastery.com.